Hello and welcome back to the Tomorrow Brands podcast. I'm your host, Ruth Bittock, and today I'm joined by Tom Cohen, founder of Glug, a new olive oil brand shaking up the category in all the right ways. Tom's had a wild founder journey, from selling 500 animal onesies a day at the peak of festival culture, to writing AI newsletters and now building a business around joyful, genuinely delicious olive oil. Tom's had a wild founder journey, from selling 500 animal onesies a day at the peak of festival culture to building a business around joyful, genuinely delicious olive oil. We talk about doing weird marketing in a world run by algorithms, using AI to work smarter and stay sane, and why building a brand that feels fun might be the most subversive thing you can do right now. Let's get into it.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for coming on. Before we start, I'd love to hear a bit more about your background, how you got to where you are now.
Yeah, sure. I started off straight out of uni with a company. We used to sell animal onesies, so animal costumes for humans. Some people, when I say animal costumes, think it's like animals turning animals into other animals with costumes, or maybe human animals into humans. I don't know, but it's animal costumes for humans. And it became quite a trend. Strangely enough, it was called Kigu, and it was around the kind of heyday of festivals. Fancy dress was all the rage, and you couldn't really go to a party without seeing a few people in fancy dress. But anyway, we got these costumes or onesies. They're actually called kigurumi in Japanese, and we saw some people with them, and we thought, oh, this is really good. On forums and stuff, people were asking for them, so we were like, all right, let's just buy 300 of these. So yeah, we bought those and we just started like flipping them to friends and stuff. People just wanted them. It was quite weird, and ended up getting, we were bringing in like 40-foot containers every kind of month or two at its peak. So selling thousands of that, we were selling like 400, 500 a day, 40, 50 pounds a pop. We were just like, what the hell is going on? And then that kind of transpired, went on for a bit, and we thought we should probably, this is not going to last. It was obvious from the beginning that this was just a craze, basically. So essentially, it went well. We saved up some money and stuff in the bank. And towards the end, when it was like dipping a little bit, we sold it to someone. Yeah, it could be time to buy it back, maybe, if there's a resurgence, cyclical kind of trend. But it doesn't look like that's happening anytime soon, because people seem a lot more serious these days. I went to Coco. The first time I've been clubbing for ages, and literally everyone looked like they'd just come out of the office, very serious looking, all black, little chain poking out, smart shoes. So it was very much the different times to wearing an animal costume and drinking like Red Stripe. They were drinking like, I don't know,
tequila and soda or something, like low calorie and clean.
Exactly, something like that, like a slice of kumquat in it.
So that was obviously an experience, but then from Kigu, what happened next? And then what are you doing now?
Yes, yeah, straight after Kigu, I was a bit lost, really. I didn't really know what to do. Got a bit confused. I started a newsletter called AI Marketing School, which was, I was very, very early, but I was definitely like very keen on AI from day one when ChatGPT came out. So I started a newsletter for marketers about how to use AI, created a course about it and sold that, and then built up this newsletter to, I think, around 10 or 15,000 subscribers. And then I sold that newsletter for a very small amount of money. And then now I've started a new project, which is the thing that I'm most excited about since. I wasn't even that excited about Kigu, it just happened. This is really cool. So I've started a project and we're selling extra virgin olive oil. Single origin, fresh, freshly harvested, very good quality, extra virgin olive oil made the traditional way, but for today's market. So no less faux Italian, a little bit more modern, but just a really good product, which I think is the first time you can buy something like this in the UK that doesn't come in a posh ceramic bottle that you feel like you have to save it for a special occasion. Because, we were just used to going on holiday and stuff like that and just having this amazing olive oil. And it wasn't a complete luxury. It was an everyday good. But, yeah, I mean, we can go into the ins and outs of olive oil. But I guess that's my story, my origin story.
Amazing. You make all of that sound quite easy.
I think it was very manageable. and it was naturally built. And I think if I started it again now, I wouldn't be able to do it.
Do you think it's interesting, speculating on why, it does feel like it would be much harder to do something like that now. And at the time, social media just wasn't what it is now. And things went viral in real life more. So I think it was only really like Facebook that was around then and like a bit of Instagram, but like the very early days.
I don't even think Instagram was around. But Facebook was incredibly good. Essentially, I feel like from a marketing perspective, you have these kind of moments in terms of things you can, whether it's a platform or a strategy that you can exploit, and it has a window. And I think for us, that window was essentially Facebook at that time. I think the next thing's probably going to be AI. There's going to be things opening up there that people that are on top of those sort of things, there will definitely be opportunities. It just remains to be seen what those are.
It's been quite a joyless time in the last sort of 5, 6, 7 years. I do think that is also like a broader kind of cultural shift, because things have been a bit grim for quite a long time.
Probably what it is, thinking about it now as well, a large part of it is probably social media. Everyone's got their phones out and everyone's more scared.
Social's made everything less fun, basically. I do wonder if there's something there that brands should think about, of creating more kind of fun, joyful things.
You could be more subversive, can't you? That was nice. I feel like in those days, people were genuinely a little bit more subversive. And now, I don't know, especially in the food and drink sort of space, which is what I'm in at the moment, it is very... Everything is heavily branded from what I can see. So people going out onto the street wearing their colors of their brand and dressed up is very heavy on the logos. And maybe it needs to be in food and drink, but I certainly want to do other things with that sort of thing. Doesn't necessarily sit with me. So I really want to try and do more. I don't know, subversive is too strong a word for it, makes it sound cooler. But like, I want to do partnerships with cool and up and coming restaurants or food people, but I don't want it to just be like, here I am using Glug. I just want it to be in the kitchens. And then I think like that kind of more subtle approach, it takes a lot longer, but it creates more of a solid foundation. And then people then don't necessarily feel as exploited as well. So they're more happy to big you up to people, because if you go in there and you're like, okay, I've got this olive oil, I'm going to give you £200 worth of it, but I want you to do 3 social media posts and a reel or something, then that's just such a rubbish kind of basis for a foundation for a relationship. If you could just be like, I really love what you do, you should probably be using our oil because it's really good, I'm just going to send you some. I think it's a much better way of doing it. And then, yeah, I mean, it's not subversive as such, but I guess just being less brand conscious and more fun conscious, more creativity conscious, more stuff which is just not about consistent brand message all the time, and just trying different stuff, trying just random stuff can work really well. Like when we did one of the Secret Garden Party things, we got 5,000 Kigu branded vuvuzelas, which actually was like the worst idea ever, because it basically ruined the festival. It's a funny story. Was it good for the brand? I don't know. But it would be nice if people tried more weird stuff. And I'm certainly hoping to do that with Glug. But it is obviously easier to do when you don't have investors, you don't have anyone to answer to, you don't really have anything to lose. You can just wing it and try things. But I know with Kigu, we were just like, this seems like a cool idea. We'll have a massive raffle, or we'll do a thing where everyone does like a 3-legged race, get 100 people together, loads of booze, and we do a 3-legged race or something. And it was really fun. So yeah, maybe the most shareable moments aren't taking a photo in front of a billboard with a QR code on it or something. It might be just doing something really silly, which is only for a small amount of people, but actually like it gets shared and it's fun.
I would love to see more of that. I feel like COVID changed that kind of marketing and it didn't really come back, because all those kind of real life things stopped. We were at like peak pop-up brand experience, like festival activation pre-COVID. It was like kind of peak experience. And then all of that stopped. But in a way, it's like a blank piece of paper in a sense. I think there is an opportunity to do some quite like weird fun stuff again, because there was a point where everyone was like, oh, another three-legged branded race or whatever. Maybe not that. But now it's like, that would be genuinely refreshing again, because it all went online and then it's all gone very cost per acquisition. Yeah.
Blah, blah. I suppose we're all now just slaves to the algorithm to an extent.
Yeah.
We may be just plugged into that. And there is something to do with maybe fear around sort of cancellation or people throwing shade on your brand and just not being able to recover from it, which I think before was not something we worried about so much. Now, and I'm not saying this is a good or bad thing, but you've got to analyze every last word of what you do in case people jump on you. There's not as much, I don't feel like there is much room to make mistakes, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. I think people are a little bit more on edge about anything they do with their brand because a pylon can happen quite quickly.
So with Glug, mentioned trying to bring some of the energy of what you learned at Kigu in, and also that you had a newsletter about AI and marketing. So assuming from that you know your way around AI.
So I'm using it all the time, every day. So for at the moment, Glug, startup, me and my wife, with a limited team with a baby and a four-year-old. Time is limited, and also budget, going through the whole imports process. I've never imported food, and I also have never imported from Europe in the sort of volumes that we were doing on more of a pallet by pallet basis. So there's lots of stuff you need to know for those things, for filling out forms, which I wasn't used to. So all of that stuff, whereas in the olden days, I would be like, Dad, do you know anybody who's ever imported a pallet or something? And he'd be like, oh, speak to your uncle, might know someone. And it would be a huge, long thing. And then now it's literally just, okay, I'm on this page 3 of this form. How do I fill in question 4 or something? And if it's an industry standard document, it will know how to do all those things. So that's really good. I was saying to you before about Instagram, which is obviously like a big part of what we do. I basically created a custom bot on there, which I've put in all my stylistic choices of how things are written. I've chosen brands that I like and uploaded maybe like 20 or 30 of their captions. And I've given it kind of basic instructions for, I'm going to just tell you what's on the image. And when I tell you what's on the image, I want you to give me a caption, use these kind of phrases, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, it will just knock out like a perfect caption for the post, and which I will usually edit quite heavily, but it saves a huge amount of time. And the output, I think, at the end, a combination of the human and the AI, is far superior to what I would probably come up with myself. And sometimes the more you think about these things, they actually get worse. So I think it really helps with that kind of thinking process. Yeah. So obviously there's the whole thing around like image generation, video generation and things, which I personally don't really use because I don't think it's that good yet. I think it's obvious, but needless to say, I'm using AI for multiple hours a day for this project, and it's saving me a huge amount of time. There's also just, you can use it as a bit of a mentor, and you can run questions by it, you can run scenarios by it and see which one it thinks is the most logical. So many different things. It's interesting. It's nice because it's all those boring bits. I'm the sort of person that I always want to do the sales, and it has to be moving forward all the time, or else I get incredibly frustrated, which is quite bad because you lose sight of sometimes your accounting or your sums. So I can then basically outsource those more mundane decisions to AI, then it makes it a far more pleasurable experience. I can then spend an extra bit of time doing something more inventive for social media, for example, or working on some design, or probably more likely just trying to send out emails and postcards to people and see if we can get them to get excited about what we're doing. So yeah, super helpful, time saver, and also does the menial stuff, which a lot of people don't like, especially founders, I think.
So what's your vision for Glug? What do you want it to be?
My dream for Glug is basically, essentially, the olive oil industry in the UK is, and I imagine in other countries, is insanely sketchy. The olive oil to be at its best, extra virgin olive oil, it has to be fresh. It's harvested once a year between October and February. The earlier you get in that harvest, the higher quality of oil it is. For example, we have an early harvest one, which we're selling as a finishing oil, which you use raw. And then the late harvest, which is December to February, at that point, the olives have gone from this kind of hard, relatively dry, green olive, which you barely get any oil from. Because olive oil, I didn't really even know that olive oil is literally just olives squeezed and the juice that comes out. You start off with these hard olives with barely any oil comes out, but it's really delicious. And then you get to the latter part of the season where they've gone plump and juicy. So they get loads of oil, the yield is way higher, but the taste isn't quite as good. So yeah, what we're doing is we've got an early harvest one, which we're using for finishing, and then we've got a late harvest one, which is for cooking. But both of them are one type of olive, which is a Picoroir olive, from one place, and essentially just different times in that specific season. What you get in the supermarket, it's basically a blend of oil from different places throughout Europe. They go around and see what's the sort of cheapest at the time and strike deals. They also get the oil which is on its last legs, really, and oil that's been sitting around for a long time. Really, you want to, in an ideal world, use your olive oil within about a year to 18 months of harvest, but it's good for maybe 2 years or up to that kind of point. So if you can go around and get oil from different countries when it's really like on its last legs, mix it all up, and then sell that back to us as extra virgin olive oil, that's an entirely different product to what we're selling and what you get in a lot of different countries, where olive oil tastes different everywhere, but it's generally, in a lot of places with a strong kind of a strong food culture, particularly in the Mediterranean, you are getting this kind of single origin, freshly harvested olive oil. That'll be on family tables. We don't get that here. Long way to say, I would really like to be able to stand up to some of these supermarket olive oils and be able to offer a product which has got a supply chain which is relatively transparent and sell something insanely tasty and which is fresh, which is why we've got the harvest date on the back of our bottles so you can actually see when it was harvested. And you can get really good oil, but you have to go to delis, which is where we'll be selling to start with. And the prices are quite high. So then it becomes this special occasion thing where it's all, don't touch that oil. We only use that when guests come, or we've spent 10 hours making a pizza dough or whatever that we really want to embellish. The oil that we've got is so high, and it's particularly high in polyphenols, the Picoroir variety, and the earlier harvest, the better. It should be used as an everyday. We'd be able to want it to be like, you can just use it. We use so much oil. It's absolutely insane. We use so much now. Just put it on everything. It makes everything. That's the best thing about delicious olive oil, is it literally makes everything you cook, 70% of things you cook, taste better. We want to be able to give people that opportunity for what's essentially like the cost of an extra coffee a month, rather than something which is just for gifting and special occasions.
It's funny you mentioned gifting, because someone for my 40th gave me a liter of olive oil and I was really happy with it.
Now I'm turning 40, so all the 40ths, I'm just giving everyone 5 liters of this delicious olive oil, and everyone is so hyped. It's just like the best present.
Final question that we ask everyone: what do you think makes a brand of tomorrow?
I think AI is increasingly going to play a big part in everything, and definitely the brands of tomorrow. I think at the moment, AI as it stands can play a huge part in making it possible for a much smaller amount of people to achieve a much larger amount of work, and potentially means that smaller teams can achieve a lot more. So maybe before you would have a team of 200 people working on something, on a business, probably that could be achieved with under 10. And whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing socially remains to be seen. I think a lot of people would think that was terrible. I'm still unsure, but I think it's inevitable. And once we get to artificial general intelligence, when the AI becomes more intelligent than we are as the person operating it, which sounds like it's in the future, which it is, but I think it's probably going to happen within the next, say, 5 years. It's going to be a huge paradigm shift there. And that remains to be seen what that means. And I think everyone needs to get on it, especially in the UK, because there's going to be a lot of global competition. People that are super bright, super young, probably from all over the world, are going to be able to do things that previously took us a long time. So I think a brand of tomorrow is probably going to be something that has learned how to harness AI to a degree. And I think the kind of social consequences of that are going to be very important. So perhaps it's not only a brand that's learned how to use AI efficiently, but one that's learned how to merge that in a sensitive way with how the social impact of that's going to play out.
One of the potential upsides of that kind of brands being able to launch with smaller teams is less need to take on capital. And then so that kind of creativity and like freedom comes back a bit, and people have the opportunity to innovate in a way.
It remains to be seen. I think essentially AI at the moment, as it stands, before we reach any some sort of tipping point, it's just an amalgamation, an average of everything that's already been done. So essentially it means that even people that are really good at using AI, if you're using the output of the actual AI, there's nothing particularly novel about it at all. That creates this kind of general sort of blanding of everyone. And any brand that just relies completely on that kind of output is just going to be lost. And then if everyone's just doing the same bland, average stuff, then it's going to be the people that actually do really genuinely creative human things that stand out. But I think they also are going to be having to use AI to do all the rest of the stuff that actually creativity doesn't really come into. So yeah, I think someone who manages to be on top of AI trends with a kind of social conscience is probably going to win the day there.
Thanks so much for coming on, Tom. It was great to speak to you.
Likewise. Thank you.